Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Hello and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. My name's Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, hosting a podcast because I wanted to provide some thoughts on the evolving role of the CISO, looking at key considerations for the future. You know, this role I came into at CIS here just over 6 years ago. And even in that time, you know, I've seen changes in terms of both the perception and then ultimately the roles and responsibilities with respect to a CISO. And in, you know, some cases, we'll talk about that current role and how it changes in terms of different organizational perspectives. In some cases, you may hear, well, it's similar to the CIO, you just have a security focus. And I think there's some similarity, but I think where maybe a CIO has service orientation, I think obviously the security perspective, the privacy perspective, or risk perspective is what potentially is the differentiator between those two roles. Ultimately, I want to talk about threat in this space as well, and really the key elements. And really any position in technology. But, you know, I align really the velocity of threat within the certain environment that a CISO has to be aware of to that constant learning and really the ingestion of telemetry to understand a posture at any point in time. And what we've seen is that, you know, it's all well and good to have kind of the quarterly reports and you know, giving that to upper-level executives, boards, and other certain committees in terms of what is our posture at any particular point in time, but, you know, aggregated for this particular time frame. And I think the CISO now is abstracting this business risk, which ultimately has always been defined as a technology risk. And I'm seeing a lot more perception change in terms of that really cybersecurity is a business risk, just given the opportunities that it provides, but also the threats that we need to be aware of. And it leads down a path of looking at the structure of an organization, as well as whom does the CISO report to. Now, there are some, you know, differences of opinion of where the CISO should report. You know, we look at some of the SEC and getting a seat at the board table in terms of not being a layer or two layers below, having that respective seat. And I think that's progress in my mind. And again, you know, Sean, that's self-serving. You're a CISO. You want to be, you know, at that table. And not that I never have at this particular organization. But I think it helps. One, create this, it removes this abstraction of what is cybersecurity as a technology risk to know it's a business risk. Here's our awareness, and we're understanding the threat. And I think that's where the evolution of the CISO comes into play, because we've got to then think and speak at different levels that permeate the organization. There's a tactical, operation, and strategic approach that we respectfully need to have and develop. Now, in some cases, respective organizations, there may be less of the operational and tactical element. It may be a CISO thinking directly strategic, but getting fed operational data in order to understand if the strategy is implemented correctly or new strategy to mitigate risk or address certain threats. That works. Again, obviously, it depends on the structure. It depends on ultimately where you're comfortable. But in some cases, the CISO has to be stretched in terms of fitting an organization perspective, but also fitting the threat landscape of the respective industry in which that CISO sits. That is a requirement that we have, because we've got to then think of within those industries, really thinking about what we need to understand in terms of a technical and a business orientation to ultimately build capability or build strategies that fit a business context, but are reflective of the technology and the threats in that particular landscape. It's one of those balancing acts to address. I'll give a quick example. You know, the adage is you don't really pay more for a control than the asset that it's necessarily protecting. And that's completely true, right? But you've got to have an understanding of the business perspective that necessarily those assets could be intangible. And then how do I rate or understand how a risk applies? And ultimately, you could get to risk quantification and applying certain mathematical approaches to try to address what is the right balance between control. Great white paper come out of CIS in terms of reasonable, you know, defining that term and what it means. And ultimately, that term permeates different organizational units. So different business units coming together to understand what is reasonable. That's a core competency of a CISO is communication, right? Is building those interactions, those connections between respective groups. If we don't, ultimately, we're not getting the input necessarily in order to understand and contextualize a control approach. So ultimately, you could miss the mark on a risk management strategy. But secondarily, you need to provide that perspective to the respective groups in order for them to necessarily understand the threat. Why are we doing these types of things? Why am I having to manage authentication in this way? Why am I having to classify my data? For these reasons, so we can manage and apply a certain control set that gives us an opportunity to be successful and mitigate risks in these areas. So creating that cross-pollination is huge. Ultimately, and again, I'm going to be biased here, but I think the time of when organizations would say, well, all the security knowledge is contained in this respective department has been lost, that no longer is the need, and that's where you'll lose, that's where the loss comes in, is everybody should basically have this understanding. And well, Sean, don't we do annual awareness training? That's not enough in my perspective. That's your general approach, but from a business unit specific perspective, I'll say that two times fast, is that you've got to think of those specificity in that area, because I need to talk to legal about privacy. I need to address risk at these certain levels when we're looking at contractual requirement and those respective terms. What is it, confidentiality? What is the availability and integrity that are required coming from those? Does that then permeate into my disaster recovery business continuity in terms of annual addressing point and time perspectives in terms of being able to manage and respectfully provide services and products at certain points in times at certain levels. So it leads us into these areas that really start to permeate stronger communication and being able to build those bridges. In a lot of cases, I've not seen this, but I'm sure that it happens, that those bridgers are not necessarily wanted. And that's where you then have to become the bridge builder in those areas and, you know, ultimately identify the value of the bridge, as it were, in terms of communication and cross-pollination of ideas and thoughts and strategy across these areas. Now, I'm not sure that I can have another podcast without mentioning AI and machine learning. It permeates the you know, our continuous learning cycle and our threat profiles, right? And so it gets to where you then look at the evolution is technology is going to be an impetus, right? We're following, you know, the data era to the AI era and really then trying to process through those capabilities, what do we have in terms of control? So I look at governance of certain systems, right? Our utility of AI. But then I also reflectively have to look at AI as a threat capability through generative AI, right? From a phishing, social engineering perspective. How is that going to then affect the organization to when I get into, you know, annual awareness trainings? But again, I think annual is not fast enough. And again, this is another strategy that has to be addressed to the organization. You know, we want to generate necessarily business value from an organization perspective, but we're continuously in security training. And, you know, I obviously, in my perspective, I have a different thought in terms of, well, that's protecting that value that you're generating with better, more astute staff, right, in terms of addressing these types of risks. And given the velocity of integration of certain tools, and now you know, AI-enabled capability is just everywhere, right? It's inevitable. We're looking at systems that are either quite transparent in terms that it's enabled and utilizing certain aspects of data and behavior, or ultimately it's a little bit more clandestine, utilizing currently to build its models based on what you're currently doing today as a data gatherer, to build ultimately the models behind the scenes. And got to be aware of those types of things as a CISO, and working through the organization in it to understand, well, one, what is the capability that AI will enable in terms of that business value generation, but then also where's the threat? You know, let's make judicious decisions based on governance practices that'll lead us to success. But again, I don't think these are necessarily sprints. I think we've got to think more long distance in terms of collaboration and being cooperative, understanding where we need to really think through a utility of AI, and then also the control, ultimately, in terms of its integration into our environment. What perspectives, what threats do we need to assess in terms of business processes and addressing really complementary services that enable AI to function, obviously that full return on the investment, but also assessing a return on the security investment of putting in a governance program, a monitoring control, and respectfully having transparency through the organization. So anyway, I'll digress on the AI. But it moves me into another space. And another element that I've seen growing is kind of the age of privacy. May 25th, 2018, set the precedent with GDPR. Obviously, beforehand, until its official release and compliance requirement is that was a preparation time. And I think now, you know, we've seen time pass, ultimately 6 years of GDPR. And then ultimately, the other security and privacy integrated. I mean, you look at privacy and think of, well, this is obviously a distributed organizational wide approach. And you're absolutely right, it is. But certainly some security considerations. And in a lot of cases where I've seen privacy control requirements is coming back to the CISO. And from a strategic perspective, to integrate through the organization to permeate privacy control and risk mitigation strategies to make sure that you're in compliance in this space. It's led to a compliance by default in my mind. You know, I see it and mentioned this on the podcast before, but it's I look for the most restrictive. I comply and then ultimately I inherit everything else from another perspective. Privacy framework, I can then necessarily integrate. It's one of the things, again, is, you know, keeping up with privacy, keeping up with AI capabilities, keeping up with threats. You know, I just looked at CVE details the other day, and, you know, for this year, I think we're 18,000 identified CVEs. Again, this is going to be another, I'll call it record breaking. I'm not sure if we really keep records on the number of vulnerabilities generated within a calendar year. But again, the velocity in that space is consistent, consistently growing. And it's one area where we then have to address the CIS controls, right? You know, I go with control one and two, foundational, know what you have, know where it is in terms of your assets, so both hardware and software. Gives you an opportunity to at least understand an exposure and address that exposure through really an appropriate reaction to what you're hearing. Gets into, different areas as well. When I think of that AI side again, and again, I told you I wasn't going to go back, but a thought in that space is to see where potentially the poisoning of that threat intelligence in terms of, incident response, to where you get to incident fatigue because of, misinformation or disinformation in terms of vulnerability. Very interesting, attack vector to them looking at is how do we verify and validate what we're seeing through the attack infrastructure and vulnerability identification in order to determine genuine, because ultimately time is not our friend in this space. We've got to react immediately in terms of addressing the threat. But if I'm reacting constantly to, false positives or these fake alarms, as it were, that's going to lead to fatigue. And then it's going to be, kind of the boy who cried wolf, or the boy who reacted to everything in the space in terms of incident response. And then it, leads us to, either ignoring or not taking as serious these types of notifications and identifications of vulnerability, to where ultimately that's going to be our detriment. So it's a balancing act, at least in that space. So next I want to talk about really some training in this area as well. What makes a how do I move into a role of CISO? How's that evolving? And ultimately, I don't think there is a single path. I think there are industry type paths that will lead to certain roles. So industrial security, having that operational technology background is certainly going to help. A system administration and engineering understanding is going to certainly help in that space to apply security principles in those environments. Others, ultimately, background in the same industry. In fact, one of the things, that I think is quite interesting is having different industry experience to bring to different industries as well. So healthcare, myself personally, never worked in that space, but working in the spaces that I have in terms of advanced manufacturing, state government, and not-for-profit, I see there's contributions, different perspectives give different capabilities, but I completely understand where you may not understand the nuances of the healthcare industry in order to reflectively, that first 90 days start sprinting into the role versus taking a gentle jog into it while trying to understand the business model and then ultimately the risks that certain industries care about. And, I think it's interesting, but I respectfully, I think different perspectives help. And again, everybody started from, kind of day one, not knowing necessarily everything. And so hopefully that's not inhibitors for other organizations looking at skills in the space and experience. We talk about certification. I've got another podcast. I'll do a one-on-one in terms of education versus experience. But I think, a balanced approach to certification in a background. One of the things from a CISO perspective that I've been seeing is MBAs, right? And you can, comment on the value of those. But it does give you a grounding in what I'll call business language. And then ultimately being able to translate that between technical, business, and wherever else. Ultimately, again, seeing that translation should not be necessarily on the onus of the CISO to be the translator, but for others to have a base understanding, or at least a basic fluency on both sides of the technology and business divide. It's just where we are, right? I mean, if technology is not enabling business, then I think there's a representatively that the business should understand the technology that is enabling them. And that then will create, again, a greater integration, I think, across boundaries. And again, I use boundaries kind of provocatively there, because I really think those boundaries should be necessarily lowered to where they're not hurdles you have to get over in terms of, time, because ultimately, if we're going to be competitive to generating that value, I think the time is of the essence. We need that time to be able to ultimately address risk in a much more streamlined fashion between groups. I'm going to talk about future outlook and where I see this is a role, I think, is, again, identified as a lead above and separate from the CIO, the CTO, the CRO, COO, and others within organizations. Ultimately, the reason I say that is because the underlying vector from a security perspective is that you're also dealing with an industry. You're dealing with a threat industry, an attacker industry, because that is run like a business. Respectfully, Tony, one of my co-host here on the podcast, would say, you know, that malware and development in that space and ransomware, these are run as businesses. These are, you know, these are our competitors in a lot of spaces. And we need to address that in kind. And why I don't see any lessening of the importance of the role, and in fact, its continued increase in both its perception and also its integration in the highest levels of organizations. So those are my predictions, at least for in that space. You know, I see the regulatory landscape changing all the time, and it has to, ultimately, in response to technology and the utility of technology within the business environment. So we address that through changes in, as mentioned, privacy regulation. We see our security frameworks that we love to implement as part of an organization's compliance approach to address reasonableness and practices of good cyber hygiene, to follow, you know, the CIS controls, obviously, my foundation, others, the NIST cybersecurity framework, just received an update, others in the NIST special publication areas, 171, 853, are constantly being updated. You see it in ISO, SOC, SOC 2, in terms of the need to respond to the environment, because it's ever-changing, right? You can't have the same control with the same capability, the same expansiveness when you're starting to introduce newer technologies, newer modalities of working with that technology. Very, very important that we understand that this is part of our landscape is change, right? The only constant is change. We'll use that adage. And we need to embrace it as part of an organization, you know, throwing in an element of agility in that space to react. Because if you take, and again, I'll give this again, another personal perspective is if you take your foot off the gas in terms of that continuous learning or awareness of these regulatory requirements, these control frameworks, these security frameworks, all the parenthetics, the fog of more, again, I can't go an episode without saying that and attributing that to Tony, is if we're not aware of the fog, ultimately we'll be blinded by it, and then you're going to be caught off guard with ultimately not being able to fit into what I'll consider the security supply chain, right? Because we're constantly looking at ourselves, but then also reflectively everybody else that contributes to ourselves generating that business value. Ultimately, we don't see that, and we move away from those areas. One, we're not going to be integrated, right? It's a competitive advantage to have these thoughts in play and be building risk profiles and threat modeling to address risk and respond to it in kind with audit programs, compliance, ultimately leading from compliance to even better security. Ultimately, I give the adage, good security, the byproduct is compliance. As long as you do it right, you'll be compliant. And, you know, you can align security decisions to compliance elements throughout any underlying framework across numerous, right? Again, obviously, this is going to be industry specific in terms of those that you apply. But it's interesting in order to look at where we are today versus where we'll be in a year from now. I'm looking, you know, at ultimately elements of automation for my own program, but also looking externally as to the advancements that are being made in that space, in order to address both an awareness of ultimately the capability, the value that that'll generate. But then also I'm thinking, you know, where do we need to be cautious in terms of automation's capability with respect to our environment? What's the testing quality program in that space? Very similar to AI. Again, we'll mention it as... not sure we can talk about the future without thinking about it. You know, if you're at RSA this year, I mean, that was, and the year before, I mean, ultimately AI is the, at least for the next 5 years, until you probably hear more about quantum. But quantum, I think, is in itself a specialist implementation. AI, I think, just permeates every sector, every level of really compute, network and utility of technology. So AI, I think, has that staying power, as it were, as being a, you know, we could do buzzword bingo, and AI will always get a hit. But we need to understand it from the different models perspective, right? Because it's not just generative AI that you can lead yourself into, well, that's the AI that we need to be concerned with from a generative perspective. But I'm also thinking about it through, respectfully, automation integration into, you know, machine learning models, which we've been using for a while. You know, it's machine learning being a subset of AI with, you know, ultimately subsets of deep learning as part of overall machine learning as well, is those need to be integrated into governance profiles. And that's not going to slow down, right? You know, we're looking at enabling through security orchestration, automation and response platforms, these abilities and capabilities to address a need to be, you know, as cutting edge as possible. You know, I don't think I want to be cutting edge. I'd rather, you know, get an implementation strategy, get a control plan in play, execute gracefully, and not rush to implement certain controls. And again, obviously, that has different perspectives on the type of control that you're talking about with respect to implementation. But, you know, I think the steadier the hand, I think the easier to implement, and doing that judiciously, I think requires a consistent approach. And the other thing, just as I mentioned, and we'll talk about security first culture in a second, but the other thing, you know, one of the trends you see is the longevity of the CISO within a certain organization. And if I remember correctly, and again, I don't have the reference for this in terms of the stats, but, you know, 2.5 to 3 years, I think, was the average. Now, again, let's use that as a, okay, we'll believe it until we see it type of situation. But 2.5 to 3 years, I'm not sure, gets into a robust security control program from a leadership perspective. I think there's a little bit more maturation required, just given the velocities. And sure, there's, you know, opportunities open up, and, you know, you have to move on. But you know, in a lot of cases, I like to see that consistency, especially going into a security first type organization, is having that consistency. And I think that comes from the leadership, right? You know, we could use Conway's law in terms of the effect of communication, but I also think it permeates ultimately moving through organization perspectives in terms of the utility of an individual who's accountable, right? We'll use our RACI element here, who's that individual accountable for security for the organization. Creating that consistency and that approach helps integrate. But, you know, in a lot of cases, organizations, well, not the right fit for this particular point in time. And organizations evolve and change as this role will as well. And so it's finding, you know, that alignment that fits both parties, right? There's value generation on both sides of that equation, both from the business and from the CISO's role perspective. So with that, you know, ultimately, those are my thoughts in the space. I'd love to get your thoughts. You know, other contrary, this is completely wrong, Sean, wrong thinking in this space. Absolutely fine. I want to hear it. podcast@cisecurity.org. Because this, you know, I could do this again in another 6 months and have completely different set of opinions based on what I read. But this is what I've been reading so far. And so maybe it's, you know, biasing me in a certain direction. You tell me. And ultimately, these thoughts leading us to where we see the role evolving. I'll do more of these kind of one-on-ones in terms of my thoughts and discussions. But certainly, you know, respect the thoughts of others in this space and those looking to move into this role or those who have been in this role for a while. I'd love to get your thoughts as well. So with that, we'll conclude. Again, appreciate the time from the audience listening to my thoughts in this area. And again, make sure to subscribe in all the usual ways. With that, I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.